हरिः ॐ सहनवतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्रीहद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
ओके पेज 57 Sutra 2.115. Further arguments are given to show that the effect is not non-different from the material cause. The effect is non-different from the material cause, or the...
The effect is non-different from the material cause. That means the effect and the cause are the same.
Okay, so they're just taking it from now material down to what's come from that rather than Brahman.
Yes,
and
the, okay. Yes.
Bhave chopalabdehe. Bhave, in the existence, cha, and upalabdehe, because of the perception. The effect is non-different from the cause, because we see the qualities of the cause in the effect. Sutra Prakashika. The Sutrakar clarifies the fact that the effect contains the nature of the cause, thus proving the non-difference of the cause and effect. Shigovindavasya. Siddhanta. In the state of being, an effect like pot or crown, bhave, we can see the cause since we perceive upalabde, clay and gold, the material cause. Present there and recognize the pot or crown by the presence of clay or gold. Right, so then it becomes a pot because you can perceive the clay. Because if you don't perceive clay, it won't be a pot.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Does that make sense? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's the whole idea, is that you can see that, or a crown. You know, it's because of the gold.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. Mm-hmm. We cannot recognize the desire tree from the elephant or horse that comes from it. We recognize earth as the material cause.
Maharaj, yeah. So, the ultimate cause is being mentioned. That is the earth and not the desire tree, which is the intermediate one. Something like that.
Means? I don't know. I'm just reading. So, is this the... An example, or is this a...
This is the example that...
Oh, okay. We cannot recognize the desire tree from the elephant or horse that comes from it. We recognize earth as the material cause. Though smoke is caused by fire, we do not see fire in the smoke. The cause of smoke is damp fuel contacting fire. That is detected in the smoke by the similar smell of the fuel and the smoke. Right? So you see is that the elephant and the horse, then they are the material coming from the material cause of the earth. Right? So you can recognize earth in the horse and the elephant. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, yeah. And then here, smoke is, it's not, here is the aspect of fire. We see that it's coming from the damp fuel. When that comes in contact with the fire, then you get the smoke. So you can see the damp fuel in smoke. Does that make sense? So the idea being is that within anything that's there, you can see the thing that it comes from. Like, let's say you got the blanket. Okay? So the blanket, then you can perceive the element of the aspect of wool. So it's kind of itchy, and the sheep are kind of itchy. You know, that quality, you can see it there. Mm-hmm. So what is the quality of wool? You'll see that in the blanket.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, there's a difference. Otherwise, why make the distinction between the blanket and the sheep? You know, but you need to make it, because if every year you try to shear the blanket, you won't get any more blankets. You'll just get less of the blanket that you have. Yeah. Bhagavatam... verse reference. My dear Lord, you alone create the universes, O Personality of Godhead. Desiring to create these universes, you create them. Maintain them and again wind them up by your own energies, which are under the control of your second energy, called Yoga Maya. Just as a spider creates a cobweb by its own energy and again winds it up. Right? So it's coming from the spider, so you can see it as distinct from the spider, but it's not different. And it can be wound up. So we see here is not only is coming from the Lord, but it goes back into the Lord. Right? You know, just like the pot, it's there, it's earth. And after a while, after it's broken, it goes back to earth. You know, the standard, dust thou art and dust thou shalt be, you know. Right? Yes.
Imagine one sense there is no difference between cause and effect.
There's no difference, but at the same time you can perceive a difference. Otherwise, then if they're exactly the same, why even make the distinction? So that's the point, is that you can see the cause and the effect, but at the same time there's a difference. So that's where the discussion comes up, because we're showing that there's the non-difference of it, and while these other schools, then they're trying to show, I mean, we're showing that it has the same and different, but they're pointing out the difference, so they can't be the same. Because then the purpose is that it has to come from the material energy. Right? But at the same time, you don't see the faults in the material energy in Pradhan.
Yes.
They're claiming that, you know, the material energy is temporary, so if that goes to Brahman, then that will, you know, be a fault in Brahman. But then Pradhan is eternal also, and so then it goes back to there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Pradhan doesn't have any misery. It doesn't have all the points that they say is coming from Pradhan, that the material manifestation has, that if it wound up into Brahman, then those faults would be in Brahman.
Yes.
Then those same faults then would be in Pradhan, and they're not in Pradhan.
Mm-hmm.
So, it just works for them because it's material, because then their consciousness and mentality can remain in the material platform.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
While then, to switch it to the spiritual, then you kind of have to change your mentality.
Yes.
Does that make sense? Yeah.
How do they see the difference between Brahman and Pradhan?
Brahman is just existing, and Pradhan then has all the ingredients that it can do things. It can, you know, so the transformation can take place. What they don't understand is that's all the potency of Brahman. They just don't connect it to the Brahman. Somehow they think the energy itself is going to produce everything.
But they say that the Pradhan is coming from
No, it's just somehow or another there. That's the problem, is when you get back to this level of philosophy, then it doesn't make sense. So that's why we like to work at this point, because we don't have any problem, because we see in logic that Pramana and Pramaya are the main, that's what you're going to discuss. You're going to discuss, which is Pramayas, you know, the various topics. But they're based on Pramana, which is the Shastra. Well, for them, it's Shastra's, it's based on their own scriptures, which that if that's supported by Shastra, then they agree with, and if it's not supported, they interpret the Shastra according to their own scriptures.
What do they say Brahman actually is?
It's just that all existing, you know, nothingness. Because they don't understand more than that. So it'll be more similar to like the Buddhists.
But it's not the source of Brahman.
No. That's why these are bogus philosophies. You understand? And the souls come from Pradhan also. So Brahman is Brahman, and then Pradhan, from Pradhan you get the material manifestation of the souls.
What do they see as the function of Brahman?
They don't. That doesn't matter. So that's the point. They know the existence, but they don't care. Just like, okay, the citizen of the country knows that the, you know, prime minister or president is there, but they don't actually care. It doesn't make any difference in their own life and how they're going to function. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's the difficulty that comes up, is that they're called agnostic because they accept the position that the Lord exists, but they don't have an, there's no endeavor to establish a relationship with him. Right? It means that the yogis will meditate upon him, but then after meditating and coming to that liberated platform, then they want to merge.
When the word Brahman comes up in their head, what do they think about?
Nothing.
Nothing.
Yeah, so any day of the week they think about it, it's nothing. Does that make sense?
No argument.
Hmm?
No argument.
No argument. Nothing. That's why you see at one point when they're being attacked using the Vedic praman, and they have no answers, they switch over to the Buddhistic thing of nothingness. You know, it's just like you take the contemporary world religions, then they'll say God's a person, and we develop a relation with him, there's love for God, and he loves us, and this and that, and he's a person, and we're a person, and everything. So when we go to heaven, then what will we have? We'll have the body we take with us. So now if you're 90 years old, that's not very inspiring. But whatever it is, they have their ways to get around it, you know. So it's whenever you then take up, you know, okay, you're 90 years old, but if you took up, you know, the faith when you were young, then you'll have a young body when you go there. If that's it, why do you need to bear the old one? But whatever it is, you do that. But then what happens if somebody from an earlier age, so they want to be walking around at 3 years old in heaven? You know, everyone else is enjoying everything nicely, and you're having, you know, people have to help you get up on the couch and stuff like that. So it doesn't make sense, but whatever it is, they just say enough to get people to like this. So we have a body, and we're all interacting, but then we say, okay, so what's God's form? Oh, God has no form. So ultimately it goes down to impersonalism, you know, on the higher level, and on the our level, then karma. So they never get beyond karma and gyan. Though they have faith in God and they know that God is going to provide these things. So it's like karma mimamsa, just without all the, you know, shastric reference. Is that what you said? So basically God is the one who supplies everything. And so if you follow, if you please God, you get everything. Just the karma mimamsis know that there's Vedic ritual to go about that. Well, then this modern context they don't necessarily have. They may have, but they may not have. Just depends upon their particular philosophy. You understand? So it's like that. It's that for the materialist, they don't care about the absolute truth because all they're interested in is materialism. So they'll only follow the philosophy as far as is necessary. Right? So those who are more sincere and that are looking for what is actually the absolute truth, and they've only come up to the level of karma or jnana, and from that they are proceeding, you know, thinking that, okay, now I've found, you know, the absolute. When they come in contact with the actual absolute understanding, then they'll accept that because they actually want that. Now those who are attached to this and don't want to actually know the absolute, then when they're defeated, then they'll just work out, you know, some new angle or new aspect of the philosophy to answer that so that they are materially satisfied. So they'll go to any length to do it, you know, including here, you know, then taking up the Buddhistic element of nothingness. So because the main point is whatever it takes to maintain our materialistic, you know, viewpoint and values. Does that make sense? That's why they may use logic, but they only use it up to the point that it works for them. And so how you take it, how far it needs to be taken to get it to work. And that you don't go beyond that. So.
In our philosophy, we have different examples in the scriptures where devotees have attained success, and therefore we too are inspired, and then we follow in their footsteps.
Yes.
So now, for these different philosophies, in the Buddhist philosophies, what keeps them inspired so much, you know, in their
materialism? You know, like money breeds money, so materialism breeds materialism. Just they're pious, but they're materialistic. So that's because you don't have to be impious to be materialistic. Like that. Daksha means he's in the category of the Prajapatis. And of Prajapatis, he's considered quite a senior of the Prajapatis. And so that means he's in the category that is the most pious people in the universe. Brahma's the most pious, and then next are his sons. So there's ten of his sons. So, I mean, of the Prajapatis, then there are ones that are grandchildren of Brahma, and then those who are children. So then the ones that are children are going to be more than even a better position. Mm-hmm. Right? So he's one of those. Mm-hmm. So that means he's the most pious, you know, he's within the 11 most pious people in the universe. And he's a total materialist. So it's just materialism inspires their materialism. So it's just enough to make sense. You just do something enough to make sense, and that's all. Right? Because that's because you have to understand what's the goal. Logic is used as a method. So just as we use it only for a method for an ultimate goal, everybody else also uses it only for an ultimate goal. Now, let's say we're talking with, a contemporary scholar. And they're being very logical, and they get very upset if other people aren't logical. Now, if in their particular, you know, whatever it is that they're presenting, if you can be, within the system, be more logical than them, and give evidence as why whatever it is that they're thinking or doing is not correct, then would we find that possibly then they might just start using other methods other than logic, like just ad hominem and other things like that?
Mm-hmm.
Right? They'll just immediately attack the person and that. Well, I'm the professor. I'm recognized in that. Who are you?
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're just some, what degree do you have? What do you know like that? I put in the work. I have tenure. I have, you know, they'll just do that.
Mm-hmm.
So we've left logic because the logic is actually just a means. You know, so even for the intellectual, it's still just a means that he is recognized as an intellectual. He can taste the taste of intellectualizing. But the point is people intellectualize for the taste it gets.
Mm-hmm.
And so logic is one of the ways to do that. Right? Does that make sense? You're using the intelligence, but in a logical way. Now, let's say we use our intelligence not necessarily in a logical way, but in support of an emotional way. So then gossip and other things like that, it means you have to be smart to do gossip. That's why women do gossip, men don't so much. Men aren't clever enough. Right? Does that make sense? So the whole point is it's being applied, but what is the point? Is the if you're not getting any taste from the gossip, is it good? No. So it has to have taste. So in the same way, the intellectualizing has to have taste. So they group together according to what kind of intellectuals they are. Does that make sense?
Yes.
And so like that, then that's what's there. They have their stories also. Like that. But we're not worried about their stories. We're worried about Bhagavatam. Okay? If we're not worried about Mahabharata as the most important, why would we worry about their histories? Right? But even if we use their histories, we'd still understand them in connection with what's appropriate. Whether they're setting a good example or a bad example, but it would establish a proper example of what we're talking about.
In case of Daksha, like, and his sons, 11,000 sons, they just come in contact with Narad Muni, immediately they get higher realization.
Yes.
Can we say that it is because they had faith, and immediately they took that association and they got, whereas his father
is not taking that advantage. you would have to say. But I'm saying the association of the Vaishnavas is very important. So Narad Muni, because of the materialistic aspect of Daksha, who's his brother, then he won't discuss all these things with him. Like you see, the discussions seriously on spiritual subject matters are discussed with Lord Brahma or Lord Shiva. He doesn't discuss it with any of his other brothers. The four Kumbharas also. So many times you'll see is that, you know, they have that, there's that description of that tree in Kailash. I think it's 600 miles wide, 800 miles tall, banyan tree. And so Lord Shiva sits under that, and then Narad Muni's there in the four Kumaras, and they talk about spiritual subject. So they're interested. None of the other brothers are so much. You know, to some degree, varying degrees.
They're busy.
They're busy, yeah. They're busy, yeah. And so then, I say, busy in the of the main pieties, yes, right. So, and that's their service, because the Prajapatis don't have that mood of sense gratification, but it doesn't mean that they don't have that material taste, right? In other words, there's the sense of duties, and that gives the taste. So it's a higher aspect of karma rather than a lower. So the taste from Dharma itself rather than from the Arta or Kama. Most people perform Dharma because they want Arta and Kama. Some people perform Dharma because of the Arta they get. Like you have businessmen that just make money, and they only make money. They never spend it. They others are going, oh, why are you working so hard? Why don't you enjoy life? Slow down. But no, they get the taste from making the money. Right? And others from enjoying the money. So they'll work hard and do what you should because then they can enjoy it. So then the, you know, the socialite, it's about enjoying it. And they'll do everything, you know, the proper dealings and the, of Arta to interact and all that, so they can enjoy. They don't want to have a bad party. So they'll be pleasant and nice and do all the right things and know how to dress and speak and make arrangements because they want to enjoy. You know what I'm saying? So all these three go together. It's just, where is the consciousness? Does that make sense? You know, so Prajapatis, even though they're involved in family life, they're involved in family life because of the duties. So they're attached to duties. You know, the material and the benefits, you know, and getting proper results in those duties. But it's not so much for enjoying. That's why they're on Maharloka. Right? Indra, now he's pious activities for enjoyment. That's why he's in the heavenly planets. So he's the topmost position that you can attain for someone who wants to enjoy sense gratification. You don't get better than that.
Okay.
Right? But better than that is the Prajapatis.
Okay.
Right? And then better than that are the great sages. Because then, you know, on top of Loka, because they don't want sense gratification.
Mm-hmm.
So they're just interested in the liberation aspect. Right? And then above all, that's Lord Brahma. You understand? So it's not that these things don't go together. That's why this refined development. Otherwise, we'll say, is no, if there's any material desire, then they're disgusting. And then no material desire means there's nothing. Right? So that's the thing we end up with, is either Buddhism or just downright, you know, sinful. Nothing, no piety or variety in between. You know? Does that make sense? Yeah, so that's the difficulty. Yes.
Whereas, like, different Prajapatis also have, like, different moods. Right? Like,
they're individuals, yeah.
Kasyapa Muni spends, I think, most of his time in meditation and things.
Yeah, but it's just a matter of, you know, what they're doing. But it's also brought out what they do. It's not that others don't do, but it's that he'll put more on meditation, Daksha will put more on yajnas and those kind of things like that. But they're all bona fide. They're all attached to the varieties of the Vedic pious and, you know, activities of sacrifice and austerity, charity, all those things. Right? But it's more attached to the thing itself than necessarily the benefit that's gained from it. You know, so it's not for a doctor, it's not that he's lost sons, it's that he's lost, you know, his you know, that effect of his duty of producing sons that will produce sons that will produce sons like this. So that's the name. So there's a slight shift in where the consciousness is. Right? You know, so then they're on that Manamoy, nicely situated there. Mm-hmm. While the sages on top of Loka, it's Vijnanamoy.
Mm-hmm.
Like that. But we're interested in Anandamoy. So
Narad Muni is giving Anandamaya to them, and they put it.
Yes. So they're young; they'll take it, and so they can be trained in something else. And so if they don't take it, then he'll just, you know, preach, and they'll become nice, pious persons, grihasthas, and all that, and like that. So that's not a problem. but they were able to take the renunciation. Because the main principle is someone who can follow renunciation should. Right? Those who can't, then they don't. That's the whole point. Since renunciation is the better position in the world, if you can do it, means comfortably, naturally, you would do that. Why would you do something less if you can do more? That's the whole thing. You know, it's just like in practical things. If you can manage the whole thing, why would you just do a part and not manage the whole thing? Right? So that's the whole idea, is that you would be brahmacharis are trained in renunciation, and if they can take that renunciation to heart and live like that, then they do, and that's great. But generally speaking, most will all get married. But now they'll get married with that aspect of that renunciation and performance of duties. So they'll be more like Prajapatis rather than, you know, animals. Does that make sense? And then from that, then as Vanaprastha, then they'll start to develop that more of that renounced form. Okay? It's controlled, it's regulated as a Grihastha, then it becomes more renounced. Does that make sense? Yeah.
You know, especially we can to come to bhakti like maybe one amongst million of people according to Krishna and Gita.
Yeah, if not more.
Yes.
Because we're taking, okay, there's 7 billion people, but then how many of the other living entities? You know, just ants, you know, or just worms. You know, just those two. That, and then we're not even counting bacteria. You know, all those guys. So it's just unlimited living entities. And so that's why Lord Chaitanya is pointing out that you have unlimited living entities in the universe. Then of that, very few are human. Right? Of those who are in the human form, very few act as humans and actually follow Varnashram. Then of those who follow Varnashram, very few are interested in, you know, the spiritual, in liberation. Of those who are interested, and then so very few are interested. Of those who are interested, very few are. And then out of thousands of those who are, then very, very rare that someone takes up devotional service. So that you have so many individuals taking up and practicing devotional service with faith, that's actually because of the potency we see of Prabhupada in the Sankirtan movement. That's the actual thing. But because we've grown up in it, we take it for granted. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like, okay, anyone before, technology is a new thing. I mean, it's always been there, kind of mechanics and a little bit of technology, but not much, not that it's a lifestyle. But then the people who are born in the last, you know, since the new millennium, they're not, funny, the ones that are born in this millennium aren't called millennials, it's the one born before. The ones that when they come into the millennium, then they're of age, then they're the millennials. So this is what it's called, Generation Z. I'm not sure whether they're going to go after that, double Z, or, you know, asleep, or 3Z, the sleep guys, or whatever. So then they grow up in technology. Everything's technology. For them, it's just normal. So for them, the unique thing is actually talking to people. So that's the interesting thing, is that a study was done that the millennials would rather interact, you know, by texting than directly. But Generation Z, who grew up in it, would rather talk to someone directly than to deal on that.
Yes.
Because for them, it's just normal. It's not something special. But for others, they had something, and then it becomes special. You know? So that's the whole thing. You grow up. We grow up in the Krishna consciousness, so we don't notice it. So we start to notice, oh, well, the karmis have this and that and so many nice things and, you know, like that. But the point is if you go out of Krishna consciousness, then, you know, where's the niceness? You know, because that's why people join, because it's not nice. You have full facility to go for it. And you don't. So when you come to Krishna consciousness, you have the same conditioning. So you have the same facility. So why is it now it looks like it's okay, when before, when you were actually engaged in it, it wasn't? Right? So that's illusion. So we don't understand how rare it is. That's why both Prabhupada and Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, they both made the point that if for all their endeavor to establish the mission and their preaching and all the effort they put into it, if from that the result is one person becomes a pure devotee, they'll consider it all worthwhile because the devotee is so special. Because why? Because this devotee pleases Krishna, as we see from Sudama Brahma. Because he's pleasing Krishna, then Lakshmi becomes so, you know, indebted. Does that make sense? Because you're doing so. Because her thing is to please Krishna. And so if you're working to please Krishna, then that makes her very happy. So it's such a rare thing. So that we have something like this and going on, that's the symptom of the golden age. Is that there's so much happening. It will get more. But that you have it so dynamically going rather than going the other way. We say, oh, it's falling apart, it's less than four. No, it's getting more. Just that we're not able to, you know, you can perceive what you value. Does that make sense? That's how the mind works. If I value, let's say, modern, sophisticated, you know, social status, then that's what I'm going to perceive. And so then devotees that have that, I'll consider that good, and devotees that don't, I won't. But at the same time, karmis that have that, I'll appreciate, and karmis that don't, I won't. And so then there might be more karmis with that sophisticated social kind of aspect than devotees. Because why do people become devotees? Because they have that aspect of detachment. Otherwise, why would they take it up unless there's some detachment? So then taking it up, then they themselves may not put much focus on because they don't have the value. They don't perceive that way. But if you show them that you have to dress nicely and all this because that's what you do, you can do it. It's just like, what do you call it? Scientists. You know, when they go to a conference, they wear a suit. You look at them, they don't actually look that good. But they're wearing a suit because they know you're supposed to. You know, so they do all the things because you're supposed to, because that's just what you do. Right? So they can understand and appreciate. So then they'll make that effort because it helps in the preaching people do. But on their own, they won't notice it necessarily because they're being detached. And so for them, dressing nicely is a material thing, so you don't do it. But if you're doing it for Krishna, then that can be appreciated. You just have to show how to follow these things for Krishna. Now, if you have that material sense, that's your value, not necessarily the everything's for the detachment that is not being connected here for Krishna, then we can connect that to Krishna and that works fine. And I've seen a few devotees that know how to do that and they look the best out of all those that are trying to look good. But those who then think that it's a value on its own, not necessarily the Krishna conscious aspect, you know, they're devotees and that they'll, you know, it may have that, but they're doing it because of the value they have in it rather than how it connects to Krishna. And so then they'll dress in less than that, but then they'll find fault in anybody who doesn't and everything like that because it's against their value. So that's what their mind sees. So unless they're trained in how to move beyond that or how to engage that in Krishna's service so it gets purified, then it'll just be a weed. And then it will take one away, and so therefore in the past, you know, it had all these faults and this and that. People were fully surrendered. Where's the fault? You know, it's just like, okay, you know, it's just like, let's say it's freezing cold and somebody's built a fire, but, you know, because it's freezing cold, the wood's a little damp and this and that, there's smoke. And so then what, there's always that guy that's complaining about the smoke. Even though without the fire, the guy would freeze to death, but he's complaining about the smoke. Everybody else, the smoke's there. It's not ideal, but hey, appreciate the warmth. You know, and as the wood dries out, then it'll stop smoking. You know, so that's the whole thing, is that glory of that, the principles that have that surrender, that Sarup Lakshana, that's the most important. But now it's being taken, no, unless the other 25 qualities are there, the 26th doesn't actually have any value. In other words, the 25 make the 26th. That's not our philosophy. That's a materialist, a materialistic mentality, let's say. And it's not even based on Shastra. It means they may take the Karmakanda aspects of the Shastra, but they won't be interpreting it according to that, because generally those who preach this a lot don't follow the Vedic rules anyway. Right? So therefore, it's not really in a strong position, because their identity hasn't been purified much. Right? Because they will choose what to do and maintain and cultivate that mentality based on their identity. So if they identify, I'm a sophisticated person, that's the main thing, rather than I'm sophisticated in Krishna's service. You know, I may have that nature, so I'll use that in Krishna's service. Or, being sophisticated, people appreciate that. Like you see, Prabhupada, when he's going to special programs and stuff like that, or where people are, you know, if he's going to see college kids, then it's another thing. You go out, you know, dressed okay. But if he's going to see, then he can dress really, 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 you know. It's not that he changes what he's dressing, it's just how he wears it. Instead of just putting the dhoti on, he'll, you know, put it on a little nicer. You know, or how he'll, you know, just the shoulders on the shoulder, he'll fold it so it's a little wider, and, you know, things like that. So it just adds that little bit. Like that. So fine points. But at the same time is then when they went to, I think it was 71, when they went to Vrindavan, you know, I think Achyutananda, Jagannatha Maharaj, Kirtanananda, that first crew that went, and they were at Radha Damodar, then Prabhupada just took, you know, his dhoti and just put it on as a yogi pata, and that's all he did, tied it around his neck, and that's all he wore. You know, because it was hot. So, you know, you're in that situation, it's sadhus, you're there, what does it matter? So you don't worry about it. But then if there's something where you would, then you do. So then that's your best platform. And if not, you dress nicely because it's nice for Krishna. And then, you know, like that means you have the ability, you like to dress nicely, but you'll engage it. Then you learn to dress nicely for Krishna because it's nice for Krishna. Right? Does that make sense? But then the lowest will be you're dressing nicely because you're going to dress nicely anyway. And then, you know, okay, then that it connects to Krishna nice. It's a great thing, because if it didn't, you'd still do it. But, you know, if you're a devotee, you're doing, you'll get benefit, you'll get purified. But it won't be dynamic as if you see it in connection to Krishna. So the whole point is if the Sarup Lakshana is there, then by cultivating these secondary ones by devotional service and seeing them related to there, then you're improving. You already have the most essential. Then you, by being aware of the value of the others in use in Krishna's service, then by focusing on the primary one, these secondary ones develop. But if we think that, no, we have to separately develop these secondary, and it's not from the devotional service, it's from some self-help book, then how dynamic is that? How is that an improvement? You know, so we may have, on the modern context, within pranamoya, we may be taking a higher position. But as far as dharma, you know, vijnana and anandamoya, then we're below the standard. Because it's not in line with shastra, it's actually generally opposed to shastra. Because those who push this generally don't like the Vedic culture and the shastric evidence that supports that. Philosophy is okay, but religion, no. So they accept Vaishnava philosophy, but not the Vedic religion. And so therefore then there's speculation on whether it's good or not, or what we should do or not, or, you know, like that.
Now it seems that we have a choice to go to the pure bhakti, and if you don't select that choice, it's like the rest is like the sixth philosophy or Apasampradaya.
No, it means it can be, it's just very slow. It means, in other words, you have accepted, means anyone we're talking about now that we're saying has that kind of more, let's say, attachment to the modern social, you know, and economic positions. But ultimately, they want to please Krishna and go back to Godhead and function in prema bhakti. Mm-hmm. So they're properly situated, but just they're in sakam karma misra bhakti. Right? Instead of nishkam. You know, so it's sakam karma yoga instead of nishkam karma yoga.
Due to our value system.
Due to our value. In other words, this is how the mind works. The mind, when it sees something, means, as we mentioned before, then there's five stages. So the first stage then is the manas, is the mind, in its connection with the senses, and that it goes out and takes the form of whatever we observe. Mm-hmm. Right? So now the senses are connected with so many things, so now what the mind will focus on, that's the one, that's what we'll do. Yes. But that'll generally be based on our values. But even that, it can take that. So now having taken that form, because that's how you experience something, is the mind takes the form of it. Mm-hmm. Right? Let's say you see the nice garden. The mind actually goes out through the senses and takes that form. So actually the mind's in the form of that garden, or what parts of the garden you see. Mm-hmm. Like that. So that's how you get the experience. Right? Mm-hmm. So now it goes to the citta, where then now it's about your samskars. Or in other words, these vrittis. What it is that you, how you perceive the thing. What's your value in it? What you're going to do. So in other words, the state of the mind, or the character of the mind, the characteristics of the mind. Mm-hmm. So the first is just the mechanics of the mind, then it moves to the characteristics. Mm-hmm. But it's through the mechanics that you get the characteristics. Yes. Right? So now, based on your values, you're going to perceive something in a particular way, and therefore you're going to analyze it in a particular way. Mm-hmm. Okay? Let us say now someone likes Vedic things. So now they see someone doing something very traditional. So they're going to see that, going to appreciate that. It'll be categorized as, you know, something proper. Vedic, you know, and proper. Then you're going to expand on that. You know, does that apply in my life? How could that be doing there? What benefit they're getting? Is that something we could, you know, preach about, or, you know, get others to practice? You know, all these different things we'll contemplate. Right? And as someone who appreciates, you know, let's say we appreciate but don't follow, you know, ourselves can't practice, we'll mention it to someone who will as our identity. But let's say if it's someone that we do, then we'd do it ourselves. Or if we're a teacher or a preacher, then we'd do it and teach others. You know, so any of those will be based on our identity. Mm-hmm. Right? Now let's say we don't really appreciate the Vedic things. We think that, so then we're going to categorize them in, you know, fanatic stuff that we don't get into. Mm-hmm. And so then we are not going to do that, because our identity is we don't do that. Mm-hmm. But if it's brought up that it's an important thing, now we'll contemplate what are arguments against that, so I don't have to do that. Mm-hmm. Right? Based on identity. This is the mechanics how the mind will be working. Mm-hmm. So it takes on those forms, but it takes on, so is that a positive or is that a negative? So if taking on that form, that Vedic form, the mind, then if you value that, then it's a positive experience for you. But if you don't value it, it's a negative experience. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just like let's say you're walking into something, it's some kind of group, right? That you're connected with. And you have some acquaintance with everybody there. Mm-hmm. Or even if you don't, you're just in a public forum, and that, let's say you're going through in the airport, you're going through a door. Mm-hmm. And just immediately behind you, there's a lady. And so then the natural thing would be you would give that little extra effort to just hold the door a little bit more, or make sure that they're close enough to put their hand on the door so it doesn't close in their face. Right?
Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that little door. Yeah, yeah. So then, now for some, they'll consider that you're a gentleman. To others, they'll say you're a misogynist. Some women is like, well, I can hold my own door. Why are you doing this? Well, you're just being nice. You know, if it had been a man, you would have done the same thing. You know, just the man, it's more mechanical. It's just, you just see that his hand hit the door, then you let go of the door. But with the woman, you're a little bit more seeing, because they may have noticed it or not noticed it, or this or that. So there's just that little. So some will take it as a good thing, some will take it as a bad thing. You know what I'm saying? Or they'll do both. I've heard that also. Is that if you do it, oh, you're a misogynist. If you don't do it, oh, what is this? Where's the culture? Where's the, you know, I've actually heard that in one sentence, talking about, you know, we can do all this ourselves. You know, we can do everything that men do. Why they, you know, try to put us in this and that, and, you know, and you know, besides that, these men are really getting, you know, losing their culture. I was riding on the bus the other day. No one got up and gave me their seat. You know, what's going on? kind of like, hey, didn't you just say that you can do what the men do? The men stand when the seats are full, you know. Now, but now you're a woman, so then you get a seat when the seats are full because you're a woman. But you know, it didn't make sense. But whatever it is, it was all in one running sentence. But, okay, cool. So it's just, that's the whole point, is that what we're dealing with here is the mind and its values. So you see, is when we're going and we're discussing it, that's the point, is because we're getting down to this technical level. See, like now we're discussing it. We can function at this level and see the difference between the manas and the chitta, and then what we're doing, what's intelligence, what's that. While when we brought this up years ago, it didn't make any sense. It's like one of those, okay, it's another one of those far out things. But that's the point. That's what the Vedanta, this study of this level, the Vedanta Sutra, then we're able to discern these fine points. And so then you see is that when we first started it, or when we're in other, you know, earlier cantos, we're just discussing the philosophical point, you know, whether we understand it or not. But we notice that this year, it's not about the philosophical point. It's how it impacts our life and how we would have to change our life.
Yes.
And my attachment, I don't necessarily want to. Therefore, you understand?
To what?
Yeah. And so that's then what seems, because that's the effect of it, is that mechanically you can now see things on that level, and now you can see, you know, whether it's proper or not. But because of attachments, we have our values, so we don't really want to go there. But at the same time, because if we go there, then we have to make an adjustment. So many
things. There's attraction and impulsion.
Yeah, yeah. So it's, you know, it's like, so that's the difficulty you have there. But you keep at it long enough. That's why by associating with the acharyas, then we get purified. We see the example. We see the things and everything.
Marriage.
So it comes up.
So in this particular mechanics of the manasa, when the senses, they capture, you know, the external objects. So is that, and amongst the different objects, you know, it focuses on something one. So is it because of the deep-rooted desires, that because of which others have been eliminated, and that particular thing?
No, it means it can only work with one. You can only work with one thing at a time.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense? Not that you can't do many things at a time, but you can only work with one thing at a time.
Okay.
You know, like if you're driving down the road and trying to get something out of your bag at the same time, means the car is moving forward down the road, but technically you're not driving.
Mm.
You know? And then somebody honks, and then, whoa, you know, like this and that, and then you're back to, like that, then it goes like that, and then it's back to, you know, getting the thing out of your bag. You know, like that. So the mind can only work with one thing at a time. That's the concern.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Yes?
Marj, in some of your previous classes, did you go over this, like what you're talking about now, the mechanics
of the mind?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we do it quite regularly.
Is there a particular section that I can go back and find?
I wouldn't remember. That's like, you know, like, don't ask me what I ate for lunch yesterday.
Would you believe this in Vedic psychology?
Vedic psychology, it's from there.
Would you believe in Bhagavad Gita also?
Bhagavad Gita also so reduces it down.
Vedic psychology,
Vedic psychology, there's a lot about that, the context within it.
But most of the time, you need to listen again.
You have to.
It's,
no, we have to.
Yeah, that's the whole thing. And that's why then you go through it, and then you like that, and then you use it in discussing it with others, then it catches more, because you're taking certain things that you understand from it, and there may be pieces you're missing. But now, when someone asks you questions, now they're asking about what they don't understand, and now you have to explain it, so then you'll get into the detail about those things that you may not have put so much focus on. You know, so that's the whole point, is that this whole process of hearing chanting the Sankirtan is beneficial for everyone. So the thing is just for someone else, no, it's what you get also. You know, sometimes just you have to go out and preach, and oh, but the point is you get benefited by their preaching. So that means your personal practice improves. Your understanding improves. Right? So you have to deal with that. So that's also the importance of this form where there's questions, because then you actually get to see, as long as the people are going to use it properly. they're just going to use it for their own purposes, and that then there's not so much importance. Like we see sometimes when you get sometimes, you know, from just the effect of the lower, what is it? Where were they? Lower East, Lower West, Lower East Side, I think. Yeah, Lower East Side. Just down there, all the hippies and that, sometimes they would be a little crazy. You know, there's containable crazy and not so. So when someone would start asking questions or doing something too weird, then sometimes probably just start kirtan. He would stop the questions. You know, just start doing kirtan. Because then, you know, they can be weird in the kirtan and dance all kinds of strange things. It doesn't matter. You know, as long as they're absorbed in dancing and not bothering anybody else, probably leave it alone. That? Yeah. Srimad Bhagavatam 10:87:15. This perceivable world is identified with the Supreme because the Supreme Brahman is the ultimate foundation of all existence. Right? So all existence is there is based on Brahman. Because Brahman means existence. Right? Remaining, so we see in one way of looking at it, Krishna is the existence aspect. You know, he's the Lord of that. Balaram's the Lord of the activities and that you do within in that existence. And Radharani is Ladini, then is the bliss that is experienced from that in serving Krishna. In other words, the existence that is there, the service, the mechanics of service to Krishna, and then the results of pleasing Krishna. Mm-hmm. Because Krishna is the basis there. Yes. In that way. Does that make sense? Yeah. So like that, then there's not a problem that Brahman being that feature of Krishna, that's the feature that is the existence. Because mm-hmm. we say but at the other time, then he's on the Icha's side. Yes. Because the point is that's there. So that's done the other way. So we have is that it goes down here. Existence is first, then the activities, then you have the experience. But at the same time, as if you put it the other way, gaining that experience is actually the top. Then there's the activities done to gain that. Then there's existence by which it's your function to do that.
Yes.
So the two go together. There's not a problem.
Yes. So we think in terms of Brahman, Paramatma, Bhagavan, or the other way around. That is how it makes a difference.
No, it's all coming from Bhagavan. Mm-hmm. It's all coming from there. But what we're meaning here is that whether you're taking the aspect of Sat, Chit, and Ananda,
mm-hmm.
like that. Because if there's no Sat, then you don't have the Chit. And if there's no Chit, there's no Ananda.
Mm-hmm.
Like that. But the whole point is what's the point of the Sat and Chit if it doesn't produce Ananda? Right, so what's the point of existence if you don't do anything? What's the point of doing something if it doesn't develop love for Krishna? So it's actually, even though one is foundational, the other one is the other way like that. So that's the whole point, is that even though we could say it's Krishna's Atmarama is the foundational aspect of it, it's not actually the most important aspect. You know, just like you can say Stai Bhav is the foundation of rasa, but it's vibhav that's actually the primary aspect, because it's then what where the interaction happens.
Yes.
So,
yes.
Yeah.
And then what we gain is anubhavas.
Sorry? Yeah, then it gives results as the anubhavas.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. This perceivable world is identified with the Supreme because the Supreme Brahman is the ultimate foundation of all existence. Remaining unchanged as all created things are generated from it and at last dissolve into it. Just as clay remains unchanged by the products made from it and again merge with it. Thus it is towards you alone that the Vedic sages direct all their thoughts, words, and acts. After all, how can the footsteps of men fail to touch the earth on which they live? So everything has to go back to there. So people live on the earth, but they're in contact with the earth. So in the same way, the sages see that everything's come from the Lord. How can you not function? How can you function separately than connection with the Lord? Just like you can't function on the earth separate from walking on the earth. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. Footnote 26, the BBT purport expounds that the Vedic mantras, though seemingly intend at different demigods in truth, aim at Brahman alone, since Brahman is the absolute truth. There may be some doubt as to whether the Vedic mantras are unanimous when identifying the Supreme Personality of Godhead. After all, some mantras state, Indro Yato Vashishyas Vishit Vasit Vasitasya Raja. Indra is the king of all moving and non-moving beings. Rig Veda 132:15.
It's like that in the
number. No, but there should be another number.
No, it is not there. I'm confirming.
Well, probably there need one more period in these numbers.
Should be.
You know, so I have never heard that. Yeah, so then it's, yeah, you know, 1-3-21-15, 1-32-1-5, something like that. Okay. While others say, Agnir Murdha Diva. Agni is the chief of the heavens, and yet other mantras point to different deities as the absolute. It would seem then that the Vedas present a polytheistic world view. Answering this doubt, the Vedas themselves explain in this verse that there can be only one source of universal creation, called Brahman or Brihat, the greatest, which is the singular truth underlying and pervading all existence. No finite deity like Indra or Agni can fulfill this unique role, nor would the Shrutis be so ignorant as to propose such an idea. Because he's there, okay, say Indra is the lord of all living entities, the king of all moving and non-moving living entities. But at the end of the creation, is there an Indra? No, because he's then expanded from expansions of Brahma. Right? And so then that can't mean him. It can't mean the demigod. But the principle of Indra means it's the king of all that. So what at all these stages of creation, maintenance, and destruction is still the lord of everything, all the energies that all living entities and non-moving living entities are coming from. Right? That's Brahman. So that means Brahman is the king. Because you have to take that definition that always works. Otherwise, the worshippers of the demigods are only interested in the benefit of the demigods. So for them, they only look at it up to the demigods and the demigods giving their blessings so they get the benefit. They're not worried what's beyond the demigods because the results they want aren't beyond the demigods. So if you want material happiness, why would you look beyond the demigods? So from all aspects, you're not going to look in the knowledge and the process and the result. It's always going to be, you know, something less than, right? In other words, they're the cause and the effect. What you want includes what they have to offer. But there's a cause before them, you know. So Indra's cause is then, you know, will be the Prajapati's, and then the Prajapati's cause is Brahma. Brahma's is then Lord Vishnu, right? So that they're not getting is that it goes back. So then it has to mean who's the king of all of them. So that means Brahman. Mm-hmm. Right?
Maharaj, the purpose of Shrutis is for the humans.
Is for?
The human beings.
For the human beings,
so
yes.
They go back to Godhead. But the Shrutis are designed in such a way, confusing way and complex way, because of
which... They're not designed in a confusing way. People get confused by it. Mm-hmm. Why? Because they want to.
What's the question?
The Shrutis are, you know, there for the purpose of showing people how to perfect human life and go back to Godhead. So why are they written in this complex, confusing way that people become confused and don't go back to Godhead?
Another one to blame.
Yeah. So the whole point is that as Madhi pointed out, so since it's another one to blame, why are we looking for blame there? Why the blame on the Shruti?
Because the intellectuals understand, you know, and the layman, they have been bereft of it.
Yes, but the point is, why would the layman blame the scriptures for their predicament?
They
don't want to go back to Godhead. They want to remain materialists. You understand?
Mm-hmm.
That's the that one could derive as the purpose of the question. So one has to be very careful, is that why would you want to find fault there? Because the living entity has free will, so he chooses to use the scriptures for his own purpose. So there are those who will follow it and use it as Daiva Varnasham. There's those who will use it for the pious benefits that they'll get of karma and jnana. There'll be those who will use it here and there as it matches with their materialistic concept, and those who will completely ignore it. You know, so that's up to them. So why would the Shruti come under consideration? Because
for example, even Bhagavad Gita, we understand only through Prabhupada's commentary. Mm-hmm. Other commentaries is very, we are confused, you know.
Yeah, but that's why we approach Parampara. So it means the point is this question, have we not already dealt with that? Have we not already established Praman and its glorious position?
Yes.
So then why would the question come up? Right? We've already discussed the free will. We've already discussed that the six schools are, they're there for persons who are willing to follow the Vedas but aren't interested in pure devotional service. So that way, at least, then they're following the religion of the Vedas, though they don't have the proper understanding of the philosophy. So that means now, let's say you take, you know, in this case, let's say a Smarta Brahman. He's following one of these schools very nicely. So that means he accepts Shastra, the Veda, the Shastra. He accepts the lifestyle of getting up in the Brahma Muhurta, taking his bath, the cleanliness. He accepts Guru. He reads Shastras. He accepts that he's using Shastric sadhana and processes of worship. No?
Yes.
Yes. So he's doing all that. Now, if he actually was interested in what's the absolute truth, coming in contact with the devotees, now what has to change in his life?
Just his intention.
Yes, that's all that has to change. In other words, that's better, isn't it? I mean, the Westerners have so much problem because for them it's a completely new lifestyle. In principle, it's not. It means everybody goes to bed and wakes up, and everybody eats and sleeps, and you know, all these things are there. It's just that they may not be used to it in that particular, you know, format. You know, yes, I remember. In Soho, in the Brahmacharya Ashram in the summer, you know, because the sun, you know, goes down late and comes up early. So getting up, then walking to the temple for Mangal Arati, but it's full daylight, like that. And as we're walking into the temple across the street, there's a whole bunch of, you know, just right on that same, you know, two side, the same street on both sides of the street, other than us, they're all like discotheques and restaurants. And they're all coming out and going home. And we're just now have gotten up and we're going, you know, so it's just the opposite. They will go home, go to bed, and we'll have, you know, just woken up. So that's the, what do you call it?
That's the Gita verse.
That's the Gita verse. That's exactly the Gita verse. Yeah. So, then the point is that we've accepted, so the lifestyle is the same. And so it's very easy. So then they can focus on the devotional part. But now if they maintain attachment to that, that'll be a problem. Just as someone maintaining attachment to their non-Vedic lifestyle is a problem, someone maintaining attachment to certain details of their Vedic lifestyle that, or benefits they'll get on the material platform, it'll be a problem. So any attachment's a problem. But at least one's pious and one's not. So one will give you less trouble. But same time, you can get conditioned by that, functioning in goodness, you know, but at least you're doing something nice. You could say, well, the other one's more advantageous, but if you don't function in goodness, then you're not conditioned by goodness, but you're conditioned by passion and ignorance. So, in other words, the Vedic lifestyle, you could get conditioned by goodness, while the non-Vedic, you could get conditioned by passion and ignorance. Not that, oh, they get conditioned by goodness, we won't become conditioned by goodness. Yeah, that's because you're not there. You know what I'm saying? So that's then what's going on. So that's the basis where we start from. So then you always have to just see like that. So,
yeah. Yeah. Let me say that to categorize things, all the questions, even if Vedanta Sutra deals with, they are in the particular categories of the six schools, more or less.
Basically.
And everything else that we, anyway, in any way, shape or form, deal with is just derivation of those.
It's, yeah, it's some combination or permutation. It doesn't mean that it comes out. It's just like, okay, I have some yogurt, and I put some za'atar on top of it. Okay? And I eat that. Then you have a pizza, right? Flat bread, you bake it in the oven with all the stuff on top, some cheese. Completely different prep, completely different thing. So two different cuisines. But now I can take that, just roll out the dough, put some cheese on it, put some za'atar on it, and put it in there and cook it. So now, is it Italian or is it Lebanese? You understand? So that's the thing, is that all it is there's the elements of the six schools. There is no elements outside of that. Right? If there is, that's in the Vaishnav. They're the ones that will have beyond. But same time as when you're dealing with the material, there won't be beyond that. So any modern philosophies will just be permutations of that, combinations, permutations. But generally speaking, they don't know as much and they won't discuss on this level. Because the level we're discussing now is the point between what's matter and spirit. They'll only be discussing differences between matter. Mm-hmm. Like that. So that's why it's at the actual point is between matter and spirit, being able to situate there. So then you can see that spirit means then all the devotional things. Then we can get into the devotional discussion, but here we're trying to tell the difference between the two. How do we know if it's matter? How do we know if it's spirit? Because that's what it comes down to. So that's what the discussions come up. You know, so then like here, then the question comes up, is then is the Shastra wrong? Because I'm doing something wrong, and I can't be wrong, so therefore Shastra has to be wrong. But the whole point is no, anything that's not connected to Krishna is wrong. Shastra is showing that. We can say, no, but Shastra shows these things. No, but that's how you interpret it. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's the whole thing, is what one can say these things, but the point is then how is it interpreted? That's the freedom that the living entity has. Okay. So we always have to see is that freedom is there. Now it's just a matter of whether they take it or not.
So when we have different philosophies and a mix and match of these philosophies, questions that come up from such people, then answering to these will be, we need to stick only to the principle.
We only need to stick to the principle and that details that has come there. It means you use an example and that works for them, but the principle is what works. Principle always works. Mm-hmm. And so we just need to do that, just use the context that they can relate to.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're talking to some Hell's Angels, you might give an example, you know, something to do with their bike or riding down the road or, you know, police or something. Other gangs or... Does that make sense? Yeah. I remember it was somebody was saying something. I think, I'm not sure if it was being translated or whatever it is. They spoke this whole thing and the other person didn't know what they were talking about. And then someone else in the room, because I think the person was, you know, very much, let's say, maybe a street, you know, like someone from street culture. And then someone else in the room who knew it, then just put it into that language using their jargon. And then, oh wow, yeah, no, that's cool. That's really, you know, they really appreciated it.
Yes,
so
yes.
That's all. You just have to put it into that.
Yes, yes.
So then we also need to know their philosophy so well that we can speak in their language also. And
that's language. Why we're studying Vedanta Sutra. Like that, because that's the whole point. Is Prabhupada mentions that technically one shouldn't sit on the Vyasasana unless you know the six schools. Means you need to know Vedanta. Then you said that. So that's what Bhakti Vedanta is. You know Vedanta, but with the understanding of how it applies in Bhakti. Just knowing Vedanta is not enough, but Vedanta in connection with devotion, that's the proper thing. That's what we're trying to do.
We read in a quote yesterday, a couple of days ago, Prabhupada mentioned somewhere in Chaitanya Charitamrita that he had plans to produce some form of a Vedanta Sutra.
Yes.
Yeah, he would give a translation.
Yes.
You know, the same what he do. Like, you know, the verse, the word for word, the you know, like, translate, you know, all those things in purport. Because you see so many important parts of Vedanta Sutra verses he's already done and worked into his books in the Bhagavatam and Chaitanya Charitamrita purports.
Mm-hmm.
like that. Even in Gita, like this, they're already worked in. But then he would do a specific study on it. Mm. So yeah, it was one of the things to do. I think also Mahabharata, I think Vishnu Purana.
And it's interesting, none of his disciples have taken it up.
Sahotamaraj did. That's how we have this.
Oh yeah, this.
Sahotamaraj's favorite books to, it means if he wanted to read something just to relax, not to get all academic and all heady, he would read Vedanta Sutra or 11th Canto.
Yes.
So for him, these technical things, these were nice. It just, you know, titillated the brain. It was pleasant.
Before bed.
Huh?
Before going to bed.
Yeah, literally. You know. When he'd go to bed, he'd always go to bed with a book. And then when he got tired, he'd put the book down and go to sleep. So that's what we have. So this is 1 year that he spent going back and forth between the words of the Vedanta Sutra and those words in Bhagavatam, you know, and finding then those shlokas, you know, and purports, and then matched it. So, like that. So it's not that everybody didn't. It's just that very few did.
But they didn't consider it important enough that they would produce it.
No, because we chant and we don't care for the rules. But, you know, if you don't know political correctness and follow modern mundane morality, then, you know, you're not a preacher. You're not a solid devotee. But Vedanta Sutra, we chant. We don't care for the rules. You work that one out. I haven't. But it's above my pay grade. Yeah, so the point is if devotees could talk on this level and understood on this level, then so many little details would go away. Little problems would go away. They're not major things. So what we would call issues are not issues. Because what's the issue? I'm attached to it, but, you know, the Shastra says one thing and I'm attached in a different way. Therefore, it's an issue. If what I'm attached to and the Shastra says the same thing, then where's the issue? Yeah. You know, it's just like, let's say, one should give up all varieties of religion and just surrender to me, right? And then you have the, position of authority, and so basically the same principles apply. So does this Sarvadharma Paritya Ja, does that in any way, inhibit or restrict or control or militate against the position of the temple president? No. So therefore, that shloka, any time it comes up that you say one thing, he says another, that's the shloka. Right? But now, if you bring up something else and he's doing something different from that, no, it's preaching and yukta vairagya. So that's the thing, is that when we know all the elements that we're working with, then we don't necessarily do that so much. We just get down to the practical application. You know what I'm saying? So then it will look actually more like what it was in the 60s and early 70s. It'll look like that, but with an improved, more sophisticated cultural aspect because of the use of Daivavan Ashram and all the good qualities that go along with it. So Prabhupada said he needed to add Varnashram, not that we need to throw out that full surrender and not accept Varnashram because we accept something modern. Prabhupada said that determination is there, that pure devotional service, add the Daiva Varnashram to that. Then you have the culture. Because that's the point. Someone fights Daiva Varnashram is a gentleman. And so what the modern wants to establish is being a gentleman. So that's the process. So he wouldn't have these difficulties, because then this isn't the issue. The issue is how to develop pure love for Krishna. Is what I'm doing purely to please Krishna, or is it not? Try to defend my attachments and, you know, all those things. Is that? Answering this doubt, the Vedas themselves, it would seem then that the Vedas present a polytheistic worldview. Answering this doubt, the Vedas themselves explain in this verse that there can be only one source of universal creation called Brahman. Mm-hmm. or Brihat, the greatest, which is the singular truth underlying and pervading all existence. No finite deity like Indra or Agni can fulfill this unique role, nor would the Shrutis be so ignorant as to propose such an idea, as indicated here by the word Tvayi. Lord Vishnu alone is the absolute truth. Indra and other demigods may be glorified in various ways, but they possess only those powers Lord Vishnu has granted them. So in other words, this is how it must be interpreted. Right? So if we don't understand that, that's not our fault. Because the point is if the Vedas are the conclusive knowledge of everything, it has to include all knowledge. So if we're on a beginning stage, we can't complain about others. We're in third grade, we can't complain about the postgraduate, you know, literature in the same subject that we're studying. The Vedic sages... Okay, so is that clear? Is that it appears that it's because it's not including the understanding of Brahman. You understand Brahman, then you understand Brahman, you know, the causes and the effects. So therefore the demigods that are there, the reason they can do those things or they're attributed with those things is because their connection with the Supreme. Not that they can do that. Right? In other words, the material world is created. It can't create. If any creation that can do is within the context of the creator. So it can do something small. Like, you know, a family can produce so many children, but Krishna is producing unlimited. So they can't do. You know, they have some aspects. So that's where it matches with what we're doing, is that you see the cause and the effect. Mm-hmm. Right? So therefore, by looking at the material cause and its effect, by looking at that example that we can perceive, then you can take that and apply the same logic to the material effect back to the cause, which is Brahman. Same principle. Yeah? Mm-hmm. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jainatai Gaura Pesha.